I see little Molly bumps. They're Molly bumps.
That's all she has. Little
sexual harassment out of my workplace. I need an adult.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we have guests Ron Bauman and Tony Miller, and we watch Dark Dungeons because RPGs are cool now.
RPG! RPG!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hey, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello!
And Molly Glover.
Hello!
And we have two guests tonight.
Woo!
Ron Bauman of the Tortuga Twins is with us again.
That would be me.
Sixth time.
I freaking win!
And Tony Miller, also known as Seamus the Insulter, is here for the
fourth time.
Fourth time.
I'm number four. I don't even try at all.
And if we seem rambunctious or full of energy and stuff.
And cider,
in Molly's case. It's because we are high off watching Dark Dungeons.
Yeah! Yay!
Dark Dungeons!
Jacked up on chick tracks, baby.
It was so dark.
If you're not familiar with Dark Dungeons, Jack T. Chick, the guy who writes evangelical and super, super conservative Christian comics, evangelist comics...
They are laughable, even by Christian standards, I would say.
It's like the far extreme Poe's Law example.
Yeah.
I would imagine most Christians make fun of Trek.
Yes, right. Yes.
So you would hope.
He has an anti-Dungeons & Dragons one that a group, Zombie Orpheus, I think is who produced it, put up a Kickstarter campaign that we, Geeks Without God, backed to get a downloaded copy of their film and support it being made. And they had to do it serious. They couldn't do it as a parody. They couldn't do it as satire. And so it's like 45 minutes long, and we just watched it, and we're going to talk about it. So if you don't want to hear about it, you're in the wrong place.
Oh my God,
spoilers! God!
We are recording at Nick and Molly's house here, so it is if the acoustics are rough... I apologize. This is not the usual glamorous basement studio, nor is it the glamorous trailer studio.
However, it is more comfortable than the trailer studio. So comfortable, in fact, I'm thinking about taking off my pants.
Oh,
it's,
hey, now.
It's the second time we've recorded here.
It is.
The other time was after Grace Church.
It's true.
So Dark Dungeons. All right. Do you want to go through it kind of chronologically through the story, or talk about favorite moments, or how ridiculous it was in general? I'm just gonna say
overall impression. You know, they had to agree to film it straight, not as a satire. And you know what? That was the best thing that ever could have happened to them.
Yeah.
Because in doing it completely straight, it is way funnier.
Than if
they tried to make it into a parody of itself. It already is a parody.
It follows the story of two girls who love Jesus, who come to college, and they get seduced into the dark world of RPGs.
RPG!
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 One of my favorite parts is when they stop the rave to go, but the real main event of the evening, we're gonna RPG.
Oh!
Because that shit happens all the time.
Stop the rave, everybody. It's time to game.
In the first 2 minutes, they totally pull like the craft and they're like, who are those kids? Oh, those are the RPGers.
We try to get them out of this college, but they're just so damn popular.
No, they're just too popular.
Oh, yeah, they don't
they're
say
so
damn.
Swearing.
Yeah, yeah.
Thus
proving that Jack Chick has no concept of reality.
Yeah.
So it's in this alternate world where RPGs can give you actual real magical powers and summon Cthulhu.
And you're popular.
And they
so
make
popular.
RPGs make you popular.
And better makeup.
Yeah.
Amazing, like, goth stylings.
Yeah.
Breasts.
They make you
They make you better looking.
Maybe that was just me.
No, you...
No.
Yeah.
Well, you saw...
And they seem to give you better hygiene, which is not like any RPG I've ever seen. No,
also, you're taller.
Yes, like, yeah. All the evil people were tall in that, too. It's like, oh, I thought I was evil, and I'm only 5'10".
That's tall in the rest of the country. That's fine. Well, yeah.
It's true.
Just not Minnesota tall. Oh. I think, well, so it was dead serious, but they threw in a few jokes for the RPG crowd. There was a reference to the John Kovalik Dork Tower comic.
Yeah.
Where they...
Do you remember when Moonstar attacked that gazebo? That was amazing.
And someone does cast Magic Missile at the darkness. which is what, Dead Alewives? I want Cheetos. If there are girls there, I want to do them. I'm getting Mountain Dew. Right, yeah, that sort of thing.
You know, what's funny...
Hang on, Milwaukee-based Dead Alewives, the improv troupe.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen them live.
That's their it's like an audio thing that's been put to many different animations or web animation stuff. Sure. But it's this whole bit about five guys sitting around playing D&D and you know, I want to cast Magic Missile. Okay, what do you want to do? I cast it at the darkness. You cast it at the darkness? Like, it's I don't know.
And the gazebo thing's from this comic where he's like, you approach a gazebo, and the one guy either doesn't know what a gazebo is or has decided that this is going to be funny. He's like, I glance at the gazebo. It's like, it's a gazebo. It's like,
it doesn't answer.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I speak to the gazebo. It doesn't answer. Like, I attack the gazebo. Like, it takes 2 damage. I don't know. Like, it's a gazebo.
Sneak attack.
Yeah.
It's actually a very old gamer story.
Yeah.
Like,
is it?
Like, dating back, I think, to the 80s. It's as far back as I've heard that story told of a role-playing game where the dungeon master is like, you see a gazebo and the players are like, holy shit, what are we going to do? And they fire an arrow at the gazebo and the gazebo doesn't respond.
It's a gazebo!
Fuck! It was a critical hit and it did not. It's
like, see, what was funny, we talked about before we started recording, is I've been playing D&D and variations and RuneQuest and, you know, man, all sorts of role-playing games for 36 years.
Yeah.
And I love, depending on where you are in the country, different cultures, you know, chick tracks, I find all across the country as I go do different festivals. I haven't seen as many lately.
Yeah.
Normally you see them in laundromats.
Well, now you don't need chick tracks because you have the internet.
Yes.
Well, Molly and I actually, when we go to like SpringCon and FallCon,
yeah,
two local small comic conventions put on by MCBA, the Minnesota Comic Book Association, they're over here. They put out these incredibly deceptive comic pamphlets
full
on the free table for full color.
Glossy.
That are, hey, do you want to be smart like Albert Brainstein? Then take this.
Are you a kid who thinks?
Yeah, if you like to think, then take this memory test. And the memory test is the memorization of the Ten Commandments with a quiz on the back.
Or like, it'll be like, are you going to hell? Like, not me. I'm not a sinner. It's like, well, have you ever lied? Well, sure. But everyone tells white lies sometimes. But God said that. And it's like Bible verse, you know, whoever shall be a liar, blah, 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 blah. It's like, gee, I didn't realize. And it's like,
yeah,
do you ever have like thoughts, angry, like, and it's just this whole, and they're so geared toward kids. So what we do is I pick up the entire stack and I throw them in the garbage every time I see them. And they're usually resurrected 2 or 3 times as we walk around. But I just throw them away because no, like that's not okay.
It's not fair.
It's not fair.
It's deceptive. It's brainwashy.
I mean, on the one hand, you have to respect their drive. You have to respect their
do
drive.
I? No, yes.
But on the other hand, what the fuck is motivating these people to push their sky daddy on top of everybody else?
Because part of what they believe is that they won't go to heaven if they don't evangelize.
Look, I grew up, my best friend growing up was a witness, and he went and he, whatever they call it when they...
A witness.
Yeah, every Saturday.
It's in the name.
Going door to door. Deep respect, mad props, still thought he was crazy,
sure,
but at least he did it. At least it was more consistent than the majority of the Christians seem to be.
And that's fair. I can understand that. But
it's
I feel
to
like
judge. It's so much less work.
But I feel like the aiming at children is the part that got me.
Yeah.
Because these comics and a lot of these chick tracks too are very clearly aimed at kids because they know that if they get kids who are already wondering, am I a good person or do I need to be worried? I already have these authority, you know, worries. I want to please my parents. And
well, this is... you just, you know, you put your finger on it, it's like, you know, do we honor their zeal?
Ooh, nice.
I would honor their zeal if they didn't think their faith was so lacking they had to engage in deceptive practices.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's as bad as those, here's a $10 tip. And then
and
you turn
it
over, and it's scripture. It's like, really? Your faith is that bad that it can't come across?
You need
that,
to trick people into your message.
You need to trick people because nothing says, I want to change my mind, than if someone does a low-level piece of shit trick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that convinces me right there.
Well,
that's
and
how
and
I became an atheist.
Like
you ruin a server's day, you know? Like,
oh,
if you're a waitress
yeah.
and you get something like that, that's like the ultimate fuck you. That's like tipping them a middle finger.
The only thing
yeah.
worse is coupons. I got tipped coupons at the Panikkukenhus. That was a big fuck you.
Wow.
25 cents off cat food. It was like, first of all, I don't have a cat. Second of all, a quarter? Like, this literally shows me what the tip is.
Oh, it wasn't a quarter. It was a quarter just for cat food.
Yeah.
Right.
It was
it's
less
a,
than a quarter.
It's a quarter with a really big asterisk. Like, it's just...
Yeah. What is it? A coupon is worth, like, one-tenth of one
cent?
Yeah.
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 Your ace is babe.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I think... with Dark Dungeons, as these
where's
two girls are progressing through this, you know, cultish RPG group, which, I mean, I've known some dedicated players, but, I mean, I don't know if I'd ever say
they
it was a cult.
Because they didn't move it forward to LARPing like they did in the movie. Because that's the thing. You took it to the next level by LARPing. That changes
yeah.
fucking
well,
everything.
And that's the thing. In Dark Dungeons, the LARPers are, like, the most elite RPGers.
Yeah, I gotta say, and it was the worst LARPing I've ever seen
they
in my
life. They didn't go outside.
Yeah, really, really.
They put on costumes and they just stood in a
stood
hallway.
In front of
yeah.
a
no.
fireplace.
One guy came in and beat and assaulted
yeah.
and
oh,
beat
yeah.
the
way,
shit
the
up
way,
one of
that
the girls.
That guy, introduced himself as Tiamat, which, first of all,
yes,
Tiamat is the chromatic dragon
yeah.
god, not a barbarian guy in a horned helmet with a double-edged axe.
Who was a zombie, by the way? He was. They
no,
said he was. No, they
we
said
never
he was.
She was the other one. Elfstar was fighting the zombie.
Oh,
right?
I thought he was. The zombie.
Blackleaf was fighting Tiamat.
Yeah,
I
Tiamat
gotcha.
Comes out and goes, "I am your." Like, how do you do that with your voice? Like what?
Oh
it's
my
a
god!
Dragon. What?
Listen. I have to bring this to the table because I really the movie was fine, but I'm vastly disappointed that all the setup and no delivery on the budding young lesbian relationship.
Right?
I know.
Where
so,
the hell was it?
So okay. They drop the hints they drop are
Marcy and Debbie are like gonna do
well. Debbie, whatever. Debbie,
Debbie's
who knows?
A little oblivious, but it's really
well,
clear what Marcy wants.
But Marcy is all about Debbie.
Marcy wants to be a little beaten around the bush. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, so I think yeah. After the movie, you kind of realize that the way they tell the story in Dark Dungeons is, it's the story about a girl who hasn't come out yet, who's deeply in love with her childhood best friend, who will do anything to spend more time with her, even if it means playing an RPG game and LARPing. And then when eventually she loses the game and gets kicked out and told that she can never see this girl that she loves ever again, she doesn't know how to deal with her feelings, so she kills herself.
I will point out, Marcy was the one that wanted to go to the party where the RPG kids were.
She's the bad girl.
Marcy
yeah,
was the
yeah,
one
yeah.
that got them both
well,
involved.
Of course she's the bad girl.
And then Debbie
girl.
Was
she's,
just better at it.
She's
well,
gay.
Yeah.
She is the bad
she
girl.
She chose to be gay.
I know, I love that.
Yeah, very beginning of the...
At the very beginning
suicide?
Of the movie, they've
oh.
got, like, this witch's coven, and they're talking
about we haven't
about
talked
it.
About the, like, conspiracy group.
I know.
The hooded
oh.
figures.
Oh,
yeah,
because
yeah.
we're not allowed to talk about the conspiracy group.
So at the very beginning of the movie, it's these hooded cult figures, literally, like, Lovecraftian cult figures, and they say... speak to us now of how you are advancing the causes of the Dark Lord. He's like... Tarot cards and astrology books are selling like wildfire among the young ones. And someone else is like, homosexuality is on the rise.
More people,
more people
are
choosing,
choosing
that's right.
to be homosexual.
That's right. More people
yeah.
are choosing to be homosexual. What's the third one before role-playing? There's another one that's like...
Politics.
Oh,
politics.
Oh, yeah.
Great rerouts
in the
politics.
Popes are making our one world government.
Yeah, one world order with our people in position, of course.
Which
you
is
know,
like the whole plot of Left Behind.
I love the, I love what is it about the loony conservative Christian folks that are so worried about some sort of global government unification thing? Is there something about that in the Bible that hints at that? Is
well,
there?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It depends on which conspiracy batshit crazy mind you go down.
And let's face it, the having a having a common foe, having a smarter than you enemy that only you know about makes you superior. It's the same thing that drives the 9/11 truthers.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yep.
The UFO people.
A sense of persecution and that.
We started to have a conversation in the car about humility and about how sometimes being humble is the most arrogant thing you can be.
Mm.
And there's another type of arrogance of going, look, I know the truth and I'm just trying to help you.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, commence to fuck right off, you know.
Yeah.
You have an enjoyable little story. Keep it to yourself.
So there's there was a nod to another chick track in this movie as well where... Marcy says that she's failing Spanish.
She can read the Necronomicon.
She can read the Necronomicon because she learned Arabic to preach to the Muslims that they're actually worshipping a moon god, which is another chick track, right?
It is.
Jeremy actually gave me that one to look at.
Friend of the show, Jeremy Stomberg?
Yes, because his uncle actually had it. Like, I think non-ironically. And or some relative of his had it at his house, and it is very much like, but it's not my fault that I was born a Muslim. It's like, right, but it is your fault if you don't change it. Like, God doesn't punish you for the way you were born, but he does punish you if you don't, once you know the truth and you don't move past that. And yeah.
And like,
Nick, I'm sorry. No. You brought up something very interesting. The subtext between the two girls was definitely, the budding lesbian couple and...
She might be bi. Who knows? She loves this girl, though.
Who knows?
It's college. It doesn't
look. Her name was Karen, and it was a fun time.
Right. No, we're talking about Marcy Molly.
She was just a lesbian until graduation. Inadvertently, they really exposed, I think, the true inherent vileness of Christianity. And
of that, certainly
no,
that flavor.
Bear with me on this one. The woman who did, the young girl who did the actual magic, she put a mind bondage on her professor, Debbie. Debbie put a mind bondage spell on her professor.
She was an elf star.
And as elf star, she literally held onto her power and let her roommate die.
Yes.
And yet, and here's where the evilness of the Christian belief system comes into place. You can do all these things. You can start raising Cthulhu. You can let your roommate die because you choose to put bondage spells. But as soon as you say, you know what? I believe in Jesus Christ. You're good to go. You can be a serial fucking rapist of children.
Yep.
And as soon as you say, you know what? I believe. You're good to go. And yet,
there's actually a chick tract that's that I find... We were talking about this before the show. About 3 years ago at the Minnesota Fringe Festival, there was a group that produced three chick tracks as a stage play. And it was hilarious. And one of them was this couple that are missionaries. They're Christian missionaries. And they meet this dude on an airplane. And the dude on the airplane is a murderer who has just gotten out of prison. And he found God. Because
that happens. You know,
he found God in prison. He was converted in prison. And now he's evangelizing the good word, and these other two people who are Christian missionaries, he basically says, you know, you don't understand. If you don't evangelize, if all you do is go around and help the poor and stuff like that, you're still going to go to hell. And then the airplane crashes. The airplane crashes, and of course, this Christian missionary couple that's been going around and helping the poor and doing all
but not spreading the good word,
not spreading the good word of Jesus Christ.
Wow.
They go to hell, and they're like, I don't understand why we're in hell.
And the serial killer goes to heaven.
And the serial killer is welcome into heaven.
This is why.
There you go.
Yep.
I've had people say before, and I remember one time I brought this little Christian girl home because I just wanted to talk to her.
Uh-huh.
And we did other stuff. And then we had this long conversation. And in the end, it's like, you don't understand. The way you describe God sounds like the most abusive relationship in the world.
Yeah.
Bow to him, do whatever you want, and he'll do or not do by his whim. Wow, what the fuck is wrong with you? Also, I'll say that if I were a missionary, I swear to God, I would do reverse cowgirl only. Never, ever.
You don't want to be a cliche.
No, it's just right.
Cards Against Humanity just last night, reverse cowgirl. That, it's an awesome card. Go ahead, sorry.
I had that's the problem I had with the movie Dead Man Walking, which is in a phenomenal movie up until the last 10 minutes.
Yep.
And the last 10 minutes made me so angry. And I was like 17, 18. I was so mad that I wish I hadn't watched it because it made me... I was so enraged at this concept that he could, you know, that the couple he kills, that they die alone and scared and cold and in pain, and he did it. He knows he did it. He meant to do it. He enjoyed doing it. But because at the last fucking second, he's slobbering like a baby with a nun going, I believe in Jesus. I accept Jesus into my heart. And now he gets to die by fucking, like, easy means, comparatively. And and we're supposed to believe that he goes to heaven. And it's supposed to be a feel-good movie where we believe in the redemption of a bad man.
Well, if it's any consolation, there was a Chick track that covered this specific topic.
Really?
It's one of the few that I remember. I'm on a downhill ride and I can't find the brakes was definitely the tagline from it. Because a lot of people believe just that. A lot of people have found this one loophole in the Christian relationship. I'll just repent on my deathbed, do whatever I want up until that point, I'll be fine. And then the Chick track said, look, you can't count on that. You gotta repent every day. You gotta accept Christ every day. And then in the end, this guy literally was on some sort of wagon or something, crashed and died, and never got a chance to repent. So they did address that. Still, fuck you, it's a bad idea. The whole relationship is a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah,
we know it's a loophole, and yes, you can exploit it, but be careful how you exploit that loophole. Yeah.
The amazing thing about the Chick tracks is they'll occasionally depict Jesus in heaven, and he's scary as shit.
Yeah.
So they're talking about this loving God and Jesus Christ loves you, and then they get to heaven, and it's this white-robed figure with it. You can't even see his head because it's glowing. And he's always just smiting people left and right.
Straight down to hell.
Sending him down to hell, and he's just, it's like the most wicked depiction of Jesus that you can possibly imagine.
What's the Grim Reaper in there too, though? Where the fuck is the psychopomp in Christian mythology?
Well, I was about to say, what drives people to create such imagery? What drives people, because this is essentially a sect of Christianity. It's not the broader paintbrush.
It's
a
tiny sect.
It is.
You know?
Look
at the Fred Phelps people or whatever they are.
WBC.
Yeah. How broken are you that you believe that your God is so vile?
Yeah.
How broken are you that you would worship something
it's like the depiction of Cthulhu cultists. They worship Cthulhu because they want to be eaten first.
Right.
They want to die in the most pleasant way possible. It's these people, the way they worship monotheist, you know, Judeo-Christian Islamic God is the same way. He's a hateful, angry, spiteful God, but not me.
Well, it's if I die in service to Allah, I get the reward, and also I don't have to be here when he comes and ruins everything.
The Westboro Baptist Church is an example. There's something really awful about that because that is primarily a family, and they are raising these kids to believe the same thing that they believe.
Many of whom are escaping.
Many of them are escaping, and that's really positive, but not all.
Have there been any reports on it from the people that escaped of sexual abuse and stuff?
Definitely physical abuse.
Because you would have to think, if you are that dead set against the homosexual agenda, you got some shit in your closet, dude.
I've always
thought that when Fred Phelps died, somebody was going to find a closet filled with gay porn. And
one hopes.
Maybe they did and they burned it. I don't know. But the thing is that there's seriously somewhere in that family, there's some serious repressed homosexuality.
Or just broken people. I mean, who knows?
But they break their own people. I mean, that's the tragedy of that. It's this self... This
every
self
religion does
cycle.
That. I mean, it there's moderation to it.
Yeah.
You know, but let's face it, even the Lutherans, you're going to take a basic story. It's like I said in the last podcast, I saw this documentary about Muhammad. He seemed like a pretty cool guy. I had a friend...
Except for the fucking kids part.
One kid.
I can't speak to that because I can't pull that reference out.
There is a 9-year-old.
It's there.
I can't speak to that because
I can't
pull that reference out. So we'll move on. But you take a kind of a cool story, and then you put all this crap around it,
mm-hmm.
and then indoctrinate everyone to it. You're breaking them to some extent.
Yeah.
I had a friend confronted by a Christian one time. He goes, well, do you believe in Christ? He goes, you know, I like the parts in the Bible that are written in red.
Ha.
Only the words that Jesus said. Let's leave Saul of Tarsus out of this. Let's leave Augustine out of this.
Yeah.
Let's just go back to the source material. you're still, now you go from ideas to dogma to you must abide by these rules. You're, even the most gentle religion, you're breaking them somehow. You're breaking their spirit. You're making them trade their future or their life for some nebulous reward.
Well, it gets worse than that, Ron. I'm going to take your point and actually light it on fire.
Damn you!
Well, they... the fires of hell. Not only do they break them, they... Religions, and we're talking Christianity because that's the most pervasive in our community.
Sure.
In this country, anyway. Religions take and impede between people's genuine, inherent sense of morality.
Yes.
Because they say, okay, you know, everyone says the golden rule is the basis of all ethical underpinnings.
Mm-hmm.
Every religion has that. Well, guess what? Every philosophy has that. Most societies have that.
Most
it's like,
people feel that naturally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's
but
the
as
most
soon as
basic moral
monkeys
code.
Feel that. I
right.
mean,
yeah,
and
yeah.
so
well,
religions
apes.
Are
yeah.
a, they're just designed to use fear and guilt.
Yes.
To come between you and sexual drives and wanting to treat a stranger well. Yeah, there's some of that in Christianity, but fuck that.
Well,
that is
fear
so
of the
small.
Other. I mean, that's natural, too.
Yeah, but that's so small. I mean, you know, I can go off
it's,
of the Bible a lot because I do a lot of studying of the Bible,
well,
and so many Christians don't read it.
It's the
but,
most prevalent religion in our society, so it's the most readily...
And there's a thousand different flavors.
Yeah.
You know, I saw this one, or I heard this one statement out of the Atheist Experience in
mm-hmm.
Austin.
Yeah.
He said, how do we know God is the good one? How do we not know that Lucifer, because in Illinois... they dropped this elementary school. They were allowed to put out a Christian coloring book. Well, because
now the Church of Satan's on there,
and now the Church
yeah.
of Satan.
Yeah,
yay! And if you
yep.
and if
yep.
you look at the Church of Satan coloring book, they're going, "Oh, you need to use reason, and you need to treat others who don't believe
mm-hmm.
the way you do gently." I mean, it's better than the Christian
oh, yeah.
one, and
yeah.
every time because the Satanist comes into Oklahoma with the
yeah.
Baphomet thing,
yep.
yeah,
and the Satanist religion is all about we need reason.
Satanist the atheist best friend right now.
They
it's
are.
Well, look at you know maybe the Church of Satan and all that is you know Lucifer was just the Prometheus.
Well, who's the bad guy here? Who's the bad guy? The person who says don't do all this shit and punishes you if you don't follow their rules, or the guy who punishes actual bad people?
Yeah. Oh.
Is the warden of a prison really a bad guy?
Although
he is an orange is the new black.
In Bible terms, Lucifer is not actually
no.
in charge of hell. He's just in hell.
Right. Suffering
it's not
until
Dante's Inferno. That's what we look at as
yeah.
hell. That's
yeah.
What
that's what changed our.
But you know what's really fun is to argue. Well, if someone really knew God, it would be Satan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Satan and a third of the angels. Turned away from him.
Knowing God
better than any
yes.
other creation.
Have you read
so,
Preacher?
Oh, I love Preacher.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I was just making sure.
The comic
that's,
book? Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you read...
Garth Ennis, yeah.
Yeah.
Sandman has a lot of really...
Yep.
Neil Gaiman's Sandman
well, the Lucifer
spinoff
from...
The Lucifer spinoff, and also there's...
Beautiful comic.
There's a novel he wrote that has it in there, that has him in there
good
somewhere
Omens?
That I can't... Good
no.
Omens. Good Omens has a lot of really good angel stuff, and...
Yeah.
And he also wrote a short story about the first murder, Neil Gaiman, which
yeah.
is it's about the first murder and it was an angel who's killed,
mm-hmm.
and it's the other angel. There's two other angels that are
one's
assigned,
investigating,
and one is assigned to be the angel of justice, and it's his job to investigate and find out what happened, and it's very that is
it's
right before the fall, and it's them. It's very much exploring these angels and how they're thinking about
well,
like.
They don't have free will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was led to murder another angel to be the one
right.
to commit the first murder by God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, like, how does that not make God the first murderer? Like, it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, again,
I think the point that we need to get to here is there are a lot of comics that have God motifs that are better than chick tracks. That
right.
Well, they're better than the Bible.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Although, if you take the actual stories of the Bible, man, there's it's the some of the bloodiest.
Oh yeah,
Violet.
Deborah
yeah.
with a tent peg.
Oh,
oh
man.
My God, she
yeah.
murders that dude for no reason.
Bashing babies' brains against the rocks.
Yeah.
Switching heads from
cutting off
wives.
Penis skin left and right.
Yeah.
Of
drowning the Egyptians just because fuck the Egyptians.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know,
bring me a sack of
oh,
dick skin.
It gets worse
hey.
Than that. Pharaoh, during the 10 plagues, seven times God hardened Pharaoh's heart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Seven times
and,
he's like,
and
oh,
Pharaoh goes,
fucked with you enough, asshole.
Pharaoh's
right.
about to be yeah.
Pharaoh's like, okay, you know, plagues of locusts, flies, swords. We want to let you people go. Please, get away.
Wait,
your God is killing
you.
I'm not done with
my
people
yet. I'm not done
yeah.
with my people yet.
Oh, even though there's no
sadistic.
Actual records.
Well.
Of the diaspora of
right.
you know
it didn't
Egypt.
Happen.
It did
sure.
Hey, do
oh,
me a favor.
Well, then how you can explain Haile Selassie and Ethiopian Zion Coptic? Come on, that's a lost tribe. Lost
show
tribe,
me,
pal.
Show me how much you love me by murdering your son. Oh, lol, you almost did it. Oh my god, I can't believe you're gonna do that. You're an asshole. You're damned.
Yeah.
So okay, so we figured
yeah.
There are five of us here.
Yeah, there
who
are.
Who've been on the podcast varying numbers of times, all of us. And we don't really have any sort of hard...
I've been on the podcast like 115 times.
116.
Oh, damn, I thought I was the winner,
yeah.
but I'm not.
Here's for you, Molly. Besides Molly, the time when you were on paid medication only counts as a half.
oh, snap.
So we figured we would just each of us ask a question that all five of us will answer for our five questions
nice.
For this episode.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Nick?
Who wants to start?
I'm going to start because I had an idea while we were talking about this. I was going to ask a good different question, but I just want to ask this because it's a dick question. What is your favorite book of the Bible?
Oh.
That's easy. Song of Solomon.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
I actually say this when I do compliments. Do you have a Bible at home? No. Can you get it on Google? Yes. Check out Song of Solomon. Read it to your partner. It is some of the most erotic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know how the heck it made it through all the translations.
Revelations. Because there's some crazy fucked up shit coming. Like nine-tailed headed dragons and like rivers of blood. And it's amazing.
It's like every good metal album cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I've always been partial to Exodus because it's like the ultimate road movie.
Anti-Semite.
And also because I've always loved the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
So, you know, the Ten Commandments takes Exodus, which is long and fucking boring, and turns it into a really awesome story.
The opposite
yeah.
of what Peter Jackson did to The Hobbit.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah,
That's a whole...
So I like Exodus mostly because of Yul Brynner, I guess, is really where
right.
I come from on that.
My favorite quote is from Job, and it's only because of the Watchmen. I am a brother to dragons and a companion to owls. My bones are black upon me. My skin is burned with heat.
Mm.
That's fucking straight up poetry, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's also only one translation. I'm amused no end by Leviticus because I love to point out how you can't say you're a Christian because A, that predates Christ, and B, you don't follow the rules, so don't whip out your anti-gay laws on me.
You can't nitpick Leviticus
when
you're wearing a jacket with poly-cotton blend.
Homosexuality is an abomination.
Yeah.
Shrimp cocktails an abomination. Shut the fuck up.
Tattoos are an abomination.
Yeah, they
yeah,
are, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Song of Solomon for me, though.
Yeah.
Cimmerillion.
Best
one.
I actually read that. It took forever.
It reads like
I
a Bible.
I hated it.
Yeah.
Well, it is the
yeah.
Bible of
and ye did Celeborn begat Celebrimbor.
That's startlingly accurate.
Yeah, well, really kind of sexy and scary at the same time.
That's my
yeah,
whole jam.
Yeah,
yeah,
really. It really kind of is.
She's half Balrog. So mine was, do you have a fondest, without going too long into a story or anything, do you have a fondest memory of playing a video or board game?
Yes. I'm going to start. I played Heroes of Might and Magic 2 a lot when I was in high school and then my first year of college, which was my then boyfriend's last year of high school. And we would play with like three of our buddies on Hot Seat. Yeah, so we're just switching spots. And, you know, none of us drank or did drugs or anything. So it was just lots of Mountain Dew and sugar and silliness and like wrestling. Just all of us would wrestle all the time. I know I know. But lots of wrestling and just being dumb and ragging on each other. And that game, man, I was just thinking about that game again today. I really, really loved it.
Blue.
Yeah.
It was
so fun and silly and it was strategy and I really liked it.
Sure. Ron?
For a video or board game, but you're going to have to indulge me, let me tell my favorite role-playing game story after this. For a video or board game, I was a busboy at Bennigan's back in the dark ages, early 80s, and there was a Dig Dug machine there. And
nice.
I would every night after everything was closed, I would play the shit out of that Dig Dug game. And
they had the greatest music.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, actually, the best music in any video game was one that nobody's ever heard of called Reactor. That was just amazing.
I disagree. It was Mappy, but anyway, never mind.
Okay, well, you can be wrong, but it's fun. But we just have so much fun, and then having a cheerleading section while you're playing Dig Dug is just adorable.
There's the Blue Door, right? They have a Dig Dug machine in the back of their restaurant. I was playing that a month or two ago.
No, that's awesome.
Dig Dug was an awesome game.
Battlezone.
Oh yeah, Battlezone.
See, I came out when Pong came out to Elitch Gardens, and people lined up around the block to play a huge Pong game at 75 cents a try.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
So I've seen
a lot of money.
Pong to what they have now, and my mind is blown. No, mine was Battlezone, that tank game. You look through the periscopes.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, when I was doing stunts, he had a Battlezone game in his garage. With a stool, and so you could play free games.
Hardcore.
I got so good that at one point I was like, okay, I want to see how long I can go before I either die, get dehydrated, or bored. 1,800,000 points.
Wow.
And just to give that into context, every time you kill a tank, that's between 15 and 20 points.
Did you get laid a lot for that score?
Oh, baby. I can't compete with the RPG guys that we saw in Dark Dungeons tonight.
Dark Dungeons.
But,
have you seen
so
that Donkey Kong documentary?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
King of Kong.
Yeah. So, for me, when I first moved out of my mom's house and in with my then girlfriend, who is now my wife and my best friend, we had a NES, the original NES system, and I had the original
NES system,
Legend of Zelda. Yeah, I know. Shut up. I had the original Legend of Zelda, the gold cartridge.
Ooh, yeah, the gold cartridge.
Legend of Zelda, and I just played the shit out of Legend of Zelda to the point that it was like the biggest argument in Pat's and my young relationship at that point, because we had the NES out on the sun porch, and I would sit out there and I would play that thing all the time, and she would just be like, I can't believe you didn't wash the dishes. You spent all evening out on the sun porch. And I was like, after a while, like every argument when she started talking to me, I'd be like, blah, 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 sun porch. Sun porch.
You needed more trap doors.
And she married you anyway?
Yeah, she did.
Amazing woman.
I showed her how cool the game was, and then, you know.
I, 1 year for Christmas, as a Christmas present, I got a copy of Final Fantasy III, which was Final Fantasy VI in Japan. And it was winter, it was cold out, the heat in our apartment was really bad. This was not long after my parents divorced. This was in my mom's apartment, and I remember staying, because I had my own room and I had my own TV, which is kind of a big deal, and I remember being like wrapped up in covers, laying down and putting it in and turning on and playing, and the intro is like the world covered in snow slowly turning with Magitek armor, these like three people in like magic powered steam mech armor slowly going up this globe as it turns, as snow falls, and this really great music plays, and you arrive in this like mining town called Narsh, and it's just like that intro will always take me back to that time period and that place in my life forever.
Awesome.
Cool.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Okay, question number three. What's your favorite thing to cook, whether it's for yourself or other people?
Okay, that's easy for me.
Yes.
I'm a minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
Stir fry. I make a kick-ass stir fry, and yes, I cook in olive oil.
What's your choice of protein?
That depends on my guest.
Mm.
I do like tempeh because of the texture, but primarily a really good organic beef that you can marinate just a little bit, and I barely touch the vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So it is fresh, and I make sure it's very colorful. I have a broad variety
of
colors.
Yeah.
And I love chopping up fresh ginger, fresh onions, a little sesame seed, and I'm good to go.
Nice.
Food I like to prepare for myself. We've talked about it. I love salad. So
you make a fuck of a
you
salad,
make like a
Tim.
Mixing bowl salad.
I make a big wonky kick-ass
It's like 27 layers.
Yeah, it's and it's delicious, and
I haven't seen you do that.
It's not
a long time.
It's not a salad that I normally would share with anybody else because it's fucking mine, but also because I like to drown it in vinegar because I love vinegar. So
yeah, yeah.
I just don't feel like that's something anybody else likes, but I love it.
That's
so
fine.
That's my thing.
Cooking for yourself is a valid answer.
I think the thing, I don't know, chili.
Yeah.
I have a signature chili that
you
is
do.
I'm very proud of the recipe, and it is meat and peppers and meat and peppers and tomatoes, and there are no fucking beans in it because it's chili con carne. It's chili, and it's
dynamite. It's very spicy. It's very flavorful. It's got the orange zest in it.
Yeah,
so it's got this
orange zest, the juice of an entire orange,
and
then a lot of lime zest.
It's really good.
No pineapple,
yeah.
But do cube like 3 or 4 tomatillos and throw those in. Those add a little bit of.
Gotta make it so we can eat that. That's amazing.
Next summer, I think that'll be the thing.
Yeah, we gotta have
you guys
a picnic or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you guys get back in town next
Please
year.
Please do.
Ron, what about you? What do you like to cook?
I gotta tell a story first because I don't know how to just give straight answers.
Yeah.
I survived as a bachelor for years. I know how to cook. I knew how to take care of myself. And I ate a varied diet. And I've been with Heather so long and we are so comfortable in our roles that a year or two ago I went to make ramen noodles and I had to look up the instructions. I had forgotten. I mean, she barely does the dishes. That's my job, but man, she can cook, and man, can she cook. And so we let her. That being said, it's either my mom's recipe, cranberry sauce that I make for this group of 40 people that we all share together, or scrambled eggs with whatever leftovers are in the house in it, because
sure.
That's how we did it growing up.
Yeah.
And there
yeah.
used to be the joke of, you know, no leftover was safe. In fact, if you killed a bug in Florida, and there's lots of bugs in Florida, save it, David, my stepdad's going to put in the egg. So,
yeah, right.
So that's like a callback to
sounds
him,
like
too.
Florida.
Yeah. I'm so white trash from Florida, and yeah, it really was.
I love to cook. Honestly, I love to cook so much. It's I like to cook almost anything. But I think my favorite thing to make for somebody is, lately at least, is something that's paleo that doesn't taste at all unusual. Like, I make meatloaf with no grains or anything. But I made a stroganoff, was my go-to thing for a long time. A crock-pot stroganoff that is my... My mom is a cook. She cooks a lot. But
no,
she...
your mom cooks a lot.
Okay.
She's not a cook.
My mom, she's not a chef. But so she uses a lot of like Campbell's condensed soups and things
mm-hmm.
like that. And then she started getting on this Food Network kick. So it's either Campbell's condensed soups or it's like a million ingredients, way overcomplicated. And I find this like, I'm very happy with the balance I've struck and my ability to improvise in the kitchen. So like, I guess my favorite thing to cook is just whatever I come up
You're
with.
You're a great improvisational cook.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's your wheelhouse.
It's true. So I asked the question because I wanted to hear other dishes, but I like cooking everything. So.
Yeah,
nice.
So, in honor of the lovely opus that we just saw, how has playing role playing games, especially as a child, affected you positively as an adult?
All of my improv skills that I use as a performer stem from role playing. Mostly as a dungeon master, less so as a player. I hardly plan anything when I DM. I'll have a very rough outline, because if you have anything more than a rough outline, it will get fucked by your players. The people generally Molly and I play with are a group of murdering criminals in when we
it's
play D&D.
True. I'm lawful good, and it's just awful. They're mean.
Yeah, one of my most successful campaigns is where they started a gang organization in Waterdeep and like did gang warfare and took on other people and like fucked with the law and stuff like that. And it was a very fun time. It was very violent and bloody and R-rated. And I didn't write a lick of it. And sometimes I'll make 3D dungeons or props and stuff like that, because we like to use our table is gridded.
You were casting a lot of pieces. You still have a lot of
the
pieces
Herstart
that you casted.
Our table is gridded with poly over it, so you can draw on the table and you can slide maps underneath, but it's inch scale, and so I'll make shit, and then I'll figure out where it fits in later, but I mean, that's my improv background is role-playing games.
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to give basically the same answer. I think role-playing, if you really get into that idea of playing a character and what would the character do, I mean, I remember there were times in games where my character would do something fucking idiotic. And somebody would be like, well, why the hell did you do that? And I'd be like, because that's exactly what my character would have done in that circumstance. Yeah, but you fucked over the rest of the party. I'm like, that's not what this is about. This is about role-playing, and this is what this character does.
Do you build your characters with flaws on purpose?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's
flaws make interesting characters.
When I played Champions, the best part about Champions was the disadvantages of the characters. It was like, it made the character more interesting when you could come up with this with these quirks that made them really, you know, super fucking powerful, but they're probably going to crap out in the middle of the battle because they're so damaged. Right. It was just... I loved that part of that game, and overall, just that way that you have to really take a character and figure out how to make that character alive and experience that. And God, working out at the festival, I tell you what, it's embarrassing to admit, but essentially, if you're street performing, you're LARPing.
I'm not embarrassed. I'm fucking proud of shit. Yeah. Yeah, I'm LARPing, motherfucker. You know,
professionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm LARPing for money.
Not some asshole in the park.
I didn't roleplay until literally just a few weeks ago, before Fest. So, I did a lot. Oh boy. So as a child, I
you one person LARPed.
I did, because I didn't have a lot of friends, or any, really. I mean, I would have friends here and there, but they were very, like, acquaintancy at school. People are nice to me or whatever, but I just was a very solitary kid. I liked playing by myself, because then I didn't have to worry about the social interactions or what other people were thinking or if I was being too bossy. So I just played alone a lot. And I used to, even when I was, like, 21, 22, I would imagine myself. Like, when I was playing... Caesar or Pharaoh, these games, I can't remember the company.
RTS.
They're like builder games basically, and you're building and I would pretend that I was an Egyptian, you know, priestess or Pharaoh, and I would have a cartouche necklace, and I would just all the time talk to myself out loud and in my head both at a combination, and be like, and now the Egyptian priestess is in the marketplace, and I'd be in the cub, you know, and I'm like choosing from the finest fresh vegetables of the day, and like greeting the people, and just that was just what I did, because it wasn't that I didn't like myself, it was just that it was so much easier to deal with people in the world with this like facade, because being myself was just so fraught with so many things. And so I did that a lot by myself, and I played alone a lot. My neighbors and I played Pound Puppies. We played this weird game that in hindsight is almost like a weird like hostile kind of game, where like we were kidnapped by bad guys and like forced to live on a playground we had to break out of, and then like it'd be like it was really weird. We did play a lot of weird games. But I always was happiest when I was pretending to be someone else. And take that as you will, but it made me feel like I had a purpose, because I was good at it and I liked it.
Have you done yours?
No.
Go ahead, do yours.
Love of story. Because it's group improvisational storytelling. It's a love story, and you can bring anything in your life, and the more you know in life, the more you can bring into it. It's a distillation and reflection of life itself. That's how important Dungeons & Dragons was to me. It allowed me to open myself up and allow myself and give myself permission to love story, tell story, be in other people's stories. Amnesiacs, when they get head injuries, they have to restory them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the story of our lives for a reason. Story is the thing that binds us as humans. And I'll leave it at that.
Nice.
For me, it was absolutely at the intersection of Dungeons and Dragons and all the games, because I played them all. Metamorphosis Alpha, Gamma World, you know.
Toon?
Yeah, Toon is fun.
Toon is great.
In 86 or 87, I worked in a New Age martial arts and gaming and comic store.
No part of that surprises me.
Yeah, not me either. And so, you know, I have original first run edition of Uncut Tick cards, like I mentioned. I had The Crow before the last book came out, all in individual books, anything like that. But it was the intersection of Rocky Horror and Dungeons and Dragons that put me in the idea of all of these fantasy people that were living in me, I could bring them out.
A sweet transvestite, as it were.
That was part of it. Actually, I was riff, but you know,
that makes sense.
No,
he was Brad.
There.
Nick was Brad.
Oh, baby.
In the musical, not the dickheads marching around on in front of the
screen. No, but in the musical.
I was a dickhead in front of the screen. That was
I was in the musical.
Nice. And it literally put me in my first Renaissance Festival, and because of that, it got me where I am here today. And I got to tell you, I fucking love where I am today.
Yeah.
I bet we're all here
best
from that.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my thing.
Do you ever play Paranoia?
Yep.
Paranoia's
yep.
awesome.
Oh, man. One of the lead characters' name was Papa Oo Mau Mau. He was a ultraviolet, and I remember that much of it.
I love the computer. Everyone loves the computer, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
To bring it full circle, Dark Dungeons, role-playing games, tell me briefly your favorite character you've ever played.
This is perfect because it allows me to circle back to something I wanted to talk about. Two somethings I wanted to talk about. I love you.
Start.
Well, you go first because I've got to think about this.
So I played what you described, I played in a group in Charlotte, Charleston, South Carolina, was in the Navy. My first wife and I and a whole bunch of people. And there were people that really objected to the way we played because the DM would set up this thing and you'd have to go in and explore the dungeon and defeat the monster and get the thing. But the rules in our group is the only way you got a magic thing was by taking it off the smoking corpse of somebody else. Very rarely did you open a chest and there was a +5 sword. You have to take the sword from the guy who's been chopping you up with it all that time.
Sure.
But more importantly, the deal wasn't the monster. We could take the monster. But the minute somebody dropped in the party, everyone else descended on him like a vulture. We had 3 or 4 assassins, and you weren't know you were playing with the assassin until all of a sudden Silverleaf turned out to be Quicksilver, who had been hired by Karis to kill you 3 years ago. And so you're like, holy fuck! And so you have to really form these bonds in the group. Karis, she'd originally been a cleric of some other deity, had to convert to Thor because everyone went Thor because Mondo declared it. And it's like, well, okay, what does Thor offer me if I convert this? Okay, cool. And so, I mean, it was that kind of politics and my character...
Diplomacy.
Yeah, diplomacy and preparation. Like, contingency spell, so if this happens, that happens. Everyone is wearing the Cloak of Displacement, so you can't get backstabbed but the first one misses. You learn to put a magic mouth with a trigger on it. If someone's going to backstab you, start shouting. You learn to really build into your character all these ideas. Oh my god, I'm just going off on
that. That's amazing.
Yeah, but
Rob
is
actually drooling now.
I literally am. Duke Duskan Rajlok Thedemon, who was a made-up race that was very much ripped off from Morcox Meldimanean. So everyone hated him because they were half demon or so everyone thought, and you know, fighter magic user of absurd level. Oh yeah, that was the dude.
I think I just have to go home and change my pants. Molly.
It was never a character anyone ever played with but me. But her name was I gotta get it exactly right. All right. It was Taffy Sinclair, which I'm now realizing was from a book that I'd seen in the library but not read. But I didn't realize it at the time. I know it now because I mentioned it and someone was like, that's from those books. And I'm like, what books? But it was Taffy Sinclair.
Which sounds like a stripper name.
Attorney at law. And I was a lawyer. And I worked at a law firm. My mother was a lawyer. I was very proud of this. And she was a lawyer by day and a dance club owner by night. and she was strict but fair and had a lot of business acumen, and my brother was my secretary and my paralegal, and we would play down in the basement, and I would just write up legal documents all afternoon while my brother would bring me cups of water that he would call coffee, and he would sit outside the desk I was at, and he would bring clients in, and I would and then he would be the clients, and my brother and I played a lot of imaginative games like that, and
awesome.
It just I Taffy Sinclair was the first time I thought, you know what, I could be a powerful force to be reckoned with in this world, because Taffy Sinclair doesn't take no guff, and she gets hers, you know, like it was. But in terms of fantasy, I really like the character I'm playing now in D&D, and I know it's my first one or whatever, and gay, but like it just her name is she's taken from Hela Brightblade is her or Brightaxe, she's a dwarf cleric, and she was in a competition among other dwarves, a fighting competition, when all of a sudden out of the blue she was like slaughtering everyone and way better, and no one knew what was happening, but it's because Hela Brightaxe like decided to bestow upon her favor, and ever since then she's decided that she needs to go be a champion for dwarf kind and like make everyone realize that dwarves are strong and brave, and she is a mountain dwarf, not like that hill dwarf who's in my party, who's a piece of human garbage.
Dwarven garbage.
No, human garbage. Oh, I know what I said, and I meant it.
Apparently, your question wins, by the way, Tony. Your question wins.
Oh, that was good.
We'll be here for another.
I had a really hard time thinking about this because I am normally DM.
Yes.
And I don't remember. And when I end up playing, our campaigns are short-lived, and then we end up going back to me running a game.
I actually, when you role-played Christian Grey that time.
And now we learn more about Nick and Molly.
And so I...
Gross.
I can't remember the character's name, but it was a Faerun campaign. It was a dwarven, I think, or human cleric to whatever god, the god of, like, traders, travelers, and prosperity.
Ooh.
Was. Trade, especially. My holy relic was a 2 double-sided coin, and I took half my levels in thief, in rogue. And I had gold fronts. I had gold teeth, and he was a gangster cleric.
He was
a straight-up criminal.
There was nothing to fuck with.
And I think his name might have been Justin Case. Or something like that. But got called Teef a lot. Yeah, yeah. And so...
Teef
a lot. Teef. Frequently. It was called Teef. But yes. So I remember playing this, like, true neutral. I think it might have been chaotic neutral, which I just want to say, I feel chaotic neutral is sometimes a cop-out for I do what I want and I don't need to explain my actions, rather than playing a character that is chaotic neutral and has, you know, idiosyncratic behavior or traits. They just, I felt like doing this, so I did that. It's lazy. He's chaotic neutral because he didn't care about the law. Money is liquid. It needs to go places. It needs to travel places. And what better way to travel than through me and out to others? And so he was a gold-seeking, treasure-hunting thief cleric. It was super fun.
Anti-Semite.
I'm going to take this in a different direction. The favorite character that I've ever played was Thomas Odison, which is the character that I played as a street performer.
I almost said Olive.
At the festival. I mean, I still do sort of, but it's different. But it was about my 12th year at the festival, and I decided I needed to change characters. And it was, when you started the festival, very few people know what the fuck they're doing. And street performing is really just a series of unrelated bits, you know, that may or may not have anything to do with the character that you came up with. And Thomas was a character where I'm like, all right, he's a tinker, he's an inventor, and I really got into the idea of what that character was and how that character interacted with people on the street. And
did he have wooden wings?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember.
Yeah,
I remember.
So he had wings, and he'd walk around and talk about how brilliant he was, and people would ask him how they were going to work, and he'd be like, "It's going to be fine. I'll just climb up on something high, and I'll be fine. It's going to work. I know it's going to work." But the thing about it was that
I'd taken all that I'd been learning, you know, the idea that nobody gives a fuck what your character background is, you know, and internalizing that character background and going, the background doesn't matter to anybody but me, except in how I interact with the people that mm-hmm. I'm talking to. And so...
consistency, that's what matters.
Yeah.
It was really, as an actor, for me, a really big leap in what I'd been doing as a performer.
Had you been acting before that?
Sure. Sure, and I mean, it was my 12th year at the festival. Well,
because you would have been what, 29?
That's another story. That's a whole other story. Where I was an actor in college, and then once I got out of college, I really didn't do any acting but festival.
Mm-hmm.
But acting on the stage to a script is very different than acting on the street.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh yeah, we all know that.
But let's face it, street performing is role playing, and that's what.
If you're doing it right, it absolutely is.
That was when I
finally it's LARPing.
Yes. But it's when I finally really got my head around how to do it right, in my mind.
Cool.
So.
Awesome.
Like I said before, I've been playing for 36 years. I've been on the road quite most of those years. And there was this group in Denver. I played this one character for 12 years.
Wow.
We started at first level. So this particular character is a 600-year-old wood elf grandmaster of flowers monk named Rogd. And he's got a porcelain leg that breaks all the fucking time. And I took the vow of poverty. And in the new feats with the vow of poverty, you're only allowed 6 things. And that includes clothing. If you have a pair of sandals, that's 3 things.
You're such a minimalist.
But you get these unbelievable powers. Your AC drops.
Yeah, yeah.
But I play an actual lawful neutral character, which scares the living shit. If you actually play lawful neutral or true neutral, they're really some of the scariest things. No, they're not fascist.
Lawful neutral is a bit of fascist.
Balanced. Balanced. So what I actually did is our group of guys, at one point, we actually took over a country. I mean, we were playing really big campaigns. We set up our own buffer country between two nations. We set up a castle. They set it all up, and I realized that they were actually advancing the power of good to too many nations. So I would clandestinely, with the DM's permission, go out and slaughter whole villages.
Oh.
To try to bring things into balance. When it came to play...
And there's no fascism there.
No.
No. I can't think of any fascists.
You could keep it balanced at any cost.
So, out of which...
He had the final solution for the balance. He just really...
Yeah.
He had the best...
So, that was my favorite character. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I was
about to say that particular question, everyone's started speaking faster, louder, and we're all... glowing with remembering.
Tell me about your character.
But I know, we could talk.
It's kind of a cliche, though.
Hours
yeah.
about that.
But it's right. It happens all the time. Trust me,
our
fantasy flight.
We have been Geeks Without God with our guests Tony Miller and Ron Bauman.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You can find Dark Dungeons at darkdungeonsthemovie.com. They were kickstarted. Give them your money because it's cheap and it's worth it.
All
it's 45 minutes of fun. We will see you next Tuesday. There's one more weekend for the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. It's the final weekend. You can come see the Tortuga Twins, the Insulter, or Vilification Tennis, or you can come trade with Beefcake and Oliver. Go see the Dregs.
Everyone else!
Yeah.
Everyone else can go fuck themselves. I'm talking to you, Mark Lazarczyk. He doesn't listen to this shit.
He doesn't play Bill either.
Well, he does, but he just wouldn't understand it.
All right.
Oh, burn!
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
RPG! RPG! RPG!
Well, of course Blackleaf died. I mean, that dumb bitch Marcy split the party. What did she think was going to happen?
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. Moral authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Dark Dungeons is only $2.50.
Wow, that's a good deal.